See more innovation in packaging and processing at Pack Expo International than anywhere else in the world. It's the show that defines where the industry is headed, with the solutions that define where your business can go. Discover cutting-edge packaging technology, processing equipment, new materials, sustainable solutions, supply chain resources, and much, much more. You'll walk away with innovative solutions to challenges big and small. Register at PackExpoInternational.com. You're listening to Unpacked with PMMI, where we share the latest packaging and processing industry insights, research, and innovations to help you advance your business. Hi, and welcome to part six, the final part of our special six-part sustainability series of Unpacked with Packaging World editors Anne-Marie Moen and Matt Reynolds. As always, I'm your host, Sean Riley, and today the three of us take a deep dive into bioplastics. Matt and Anne-Marie cover sustainability and packaging materials daily for leading packaging publication Packaging World. In my opinion, bioplastics seem like they would be the holy grail of sustainable packaging. A packaging material that comes from renewable resources that don't harm the planet and then don't leave any refuse behind? Sign me up. Anne-Marie and Matt explain, however, that while bioplastics can indeed be renewable, there are issues companies face around making the material affordable enough for retailers and consumers to buy in. They discuss where we are currently with bioplastic and what lies ahead in the near future. So let's jump right in.
So with all the fancy introductions out of the way, welcome back to the podcast, Matt Reynolds and Anne-Marie Moen. Matt, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Anne-Marie, welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure's always mine. Today we're here to talk about bioplastics. And bioplastics, first of all, as I say it out loud, sounds like an oxymoron. Bioplastic. Anyway, they were going to be the silver bullet that was going to solve every problem. They were going to be the film, they were going to be the resin, they were going to be the things that we were going to use that was going to be renewable. And everybody was excited about it, whether it was 10, 15 years ago. And I feel like everyone started throwing their R&D budgets and things at it. So I guess to start, before we really get into it, why was that the case?
Well, one thing that really captured everyone's attention about bioplastics is that they're made from a renewable resource versus being made from petroleum. So they use sugarcane, they use corn, and now they're even using more cellulose feedstock like wood chips and things like that. Oh, so really? It's okay. Made from a renewable resource. And not only are they a renewable resource, but because they are, they sequester carbon. So they take carbon in rather than emitting it. So that's another advantage. And as we moved along in the development of bioplastics, there came a technology called drop-in plastics or bioplastics, where they have the same functionality and same properties as a petroleum-based plastic. So with the early PLA or polylactic acid, mm-hmm. which was the biggest thing to happen, right. like back in 2000 or so, the problem was that you could make the bottle, it didn't have the same properties, it was really sensitive to heat, and then it also would contaminate the recycling stream. But for a consumer, you couldn't really tell the difference in the bottles, so they'd just throw it in with recycling. But with drop-in bioplastics, you have the same functionality, they can be recycled, and so that was a huge advancement in the technology.
Interesting. So the good plastics would contaminate the bad plastics, essentially. Bad being my term for in the recycling chain, but this stuff from natural resources, I guess, because it's not the same. Interesting. I wouldn't have thought of it that way. I guess I just figured it would fizzle out once it got into the recycling chain.
Yeah, functionally it's the same, but you know, as soon as it gets to the MRF, then that's where trouble occurs.
Right. The MRFs, there's a lot of trouble at the MRF, and we've understood that as we've done a series of these podcasts. All right, so this stuff is awesome. Why isn't it everywhere? Why are we not seeing it on every shelf? Why isn't it?
Well, I mean, one thing that's changed since you mentioned 2000 to the early 2000s is, plastics in general have just really taken a perception beating. Mm-hmm. You know, So the focus on sustainability as it pertains to packaging is now, you know, the eye is cast on plastics, right. And bioplastics are still plastics. They're still a kind of an alphabet soup of PE, PET, and all these kinds of, letters that confuse consumers and scare consumers because they're not exactly sure how to recycle it. And as Anne-Marie said, some of them can't be recycled. I think early on, there was this misconception that, because the bio's in the word, they assume they're biodegradable.
Right.
So over the years, we had to be real careful about defining what biodegradable is. Just because it's bioplastic doesn't make it biodegradable necessarily. And the differences between compostability and backyard versus, industrial compostability and biodegradability, these are all very kind of Venn diagrams that overlap a little bit, but, mm-hmm. They're not the same thing.
Right.
So it's further confusing to the consumer. It costs more. Bioplastics cost more. I mean, that's a, bottom line kind of thing.
Always the driver,
so,
yes.
Yeah, so petroleum-based virgin plastic is really high quality, and it's super cheap the way it's made right now. And there's a lot of efforts right now to kind of level that playing field and create some, make sure that the finances or the economics isn't the only driver there, And there's some worry about, food is a worry. If bioplastics are coming from corn and from, sugar cane, is that eating into the world's food supply? Now, it's a genuine concern. I think since then we've realized that the percentage is really, really tiny. That's actually eating into what potentially could be food. And now, as Anne-Marie said, now you're starting to add cellulose, non-food cellulose, food waste or non-food, which is wood chips or food waste as, mm-hmm. Post-use food, essentially.
Right.
I mean, imagine like brewers giving up their, spent barley or something
sure.
like that. So, mm-hmm. so that's not as much of a concern, but okay. It was just one of many that kind of pumped the brakes on what we thought in 2002 or something like that would be the silver bullet. Eating up R&D budget very slowly over the course of time is what's happened instead of it being some big, immediate threshold so, moment. Right. Yeah.
Okay. So I guess we use these last decade or whatever to, well, we didn't have to spend the R&D, fortunately. But now that they've kind of ironed this all out and learned all this, are there some examples now that we have out there in the marketplace that are finding ways to apply this?
Absolutely. And one of the biggest suppliers of bioplastics that I'm aware of, where we've really seen a lot of applications, both in rigid and in flexible, is Braskem.
Okay.
And they do a drop-in bioplastic. They do a drop-in polyethylene. And we have several examples of what they're doing. Originally, they were supplying part of the feedstock for Coca-Cola's plant bottle. They also work with a company in the UK to make a reusable bottle. So it was for tourists there who would get a water bottle and then just litter. So
yeah.
There was a lot of litter from tourists. And now you can get the bottle filled and then reuse it. It's a very durable, recyclable and reusable package. So Delicious Almond Milk is using it for their packaging. There's a toothpaste tube from Ireland that's using the Braskem drop-in bioplastic. So yes, we definitely have applications.
Now, you say that Coca-Cola was using Braskem. Are they not still? I remember, and I remember you just obviously saying 30 seconds ago, but I also remember reading this, that they were using them and now it seems like are you implying that they're not anymore?
Well, what's really exciting is just recently they were able to come up with or crack the code on engineering a completely bioplastic bottle, plant-based bottle.
Okay.
So formerly they were using 30% bioplastic, and I don't know, it's been maybe 12 years that they've been developing this, lot of R&D, and they switched, and I don't know exactly why they made the switch or they were looking for suppliers, they were investing in different companies, but now they're using 30% hardwood from forestry and sawmill side streams. And then 70% is now from corn and sugarcane, but it is not Braskem's. It's a different technology that they're using. And then at the same time, Suntory Beverages also just announced that they have completed a 100% plant-based bottle. Now, in their case, they're using 30% material from molasses, which is very interesting, and they were doing that before. And then 70% is from non-food feedstock. They both kind of hit the finish line at the same time, but it's very exciting.
Yeah, that is. Now, for Coca-Cola, for example, are they, I will admit I don't drink a lot of soda. Is this just, I know I've seen it with like the Dasani and stuff like that. Are they able to use this across their product line, or is this just something that's something like a water? Like does the different beverages have a different effect in the bottle, or can they use their whole product line in these bottles?
My understanding is that they could use it across the bottles. Right now, they're waiting for a commercial scale-up of this technology, but their goal really isn't to replace what they have now. Okay. It's to be another option. So they're trying to reach all these sustainability goals. And if I, you know, look at my notes here, they've said that their strategy is to use 70% to 80% recycled PET. And then use advanced recycling and renewable materials for the other 30%. So they're not moving to plant-based, but it's an addition to.
Okay.
Another tool in the toolkit. Basically.
Yeah, I was going to say. So it's another way to meet a certain number or a certain goal, and I understand that. Okay, so are there, I guess the, what I'm thinking is, are there other kinds of bioplastics besides these, I guess, what we've been calling drop-ins, things that, you know, that can go with PE or PET being used in the marketplace?
Yeah, there's a lot being done with, you know, starches, thermoplastics, or excuse me, thermoplastic starches. I just covered one, I think it was a year ago now, though. It was with Sealed Air, and it was a pasta company out of Seattle called Cucina Fresca. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly.
I feel like I've had that before. Yes.
Possibly. Yeah. I mean, they sell it out of like that Pike Place market or whatever. Wow. So, the lidding material, it was a thermoplastic tray with pasta inside. And I don't remember if it was MAP. It could have been MAP, modified atmosphere, but it was a matter of the lidding material turning to this thermoplastic starch. That was an interesting, and it wasn't the full amount. It was a percentage of it using it. But then, on the subject of starches, there's also, you know, a lot's being done with potatoes, potato starch, and there's a few different versions. One of them is Wada potato that uses resins. It's a biologic with the logic with a Q from New Plastic, plastic with a Q. Sorry, I had to look at my notes for that.
I know, there's some reason.
And it's, yeah, 20 to 30% of the pack itself, the pouch, is from that TPS or a potato-based starch. So, and then also Alexia potatoes from Land Watson are using a potato-based starch in the pouch. So the interesting thing there is you've got potatoes in the pack, yeah, right. And the pouch is made from potatoes in a sense, or at least a portion of it. So there's some circularity there.
I was going to say that seems very circular, having potatoes in potatoes. So I guess are there to kind of put a button on this discussion with bioplastics. Are there others out there that we haven't touched on? Because so far, I had no idea about the potatoes. I didn't know about the wood and the cellulose. So I'm learning, at least somebody out there is definitely learning along with me. So are there other ones out there that would be noteworthy that we should get out?
Well, I mentioned that one of the early misconceptions is that all bioplastics were, biodegradable, right, by nature, mm-hmm, and they're not. But as Anne-Marie knows, that at least one or two of them are. So I think one of them was,
yes, there's a really exciting new technology that has been in development for quite a few years, and it's called PHA. The resin is called PHA, and I can't tell you, I know what it stands for, but I can't say
polyhydroalkanoate.
Yes. And it's made from a naturally occurring organism, which is one step beyond what we've been seeing. And what's really noteworthy about it is that it is marine biodegradable. One company that's been working with Danimer Scientific, which is one of the biggest companies that I'm aware of that's working on this technology, is Frito-Lay. And they just released a compostable package made from this PHA material. The product is off the eaten path. So some people may remember that years ago, PepsiCo was really ahead of its time in creating compostable snack bags. Mm-hmm. But the problem at the time was that it was too loud. Oh, so they yes. fixed that. And so this is a very exciting development.
So that, yeah, they did get the sound out of Sun Chips. People were very unhappy that their potato chip bag, or their Sun Chip bag, excuse me, was too loud, which in and of itself is hilarious because
priorities, right?
Yeah. Priorities and chip bags aren't exactly silent as anyone who's ever been in a movie theater would know.
And Bacardi's also using this technology too. Yeah. So it's big between Frito-Lay and Bacardi. Those are two big brands using yeah. this Danimer scientific.
Fantastic. And I guess to kind of wrap up, and again, I thank Anne-Marie and Matt for your time, is that one thing that you've said a lot, and I don't know that I've really highlighted or we've highlighted enough, is marine biodegradable. And from what I understand by saying that is that that's something that in the end will not harm the ocean, correct?
That's my understanding of it.
Right. I mean, that's the biggest thing with plastics. That's the biggest thing that we're always hearing is that at the end of the day, yes, we see it in landfills and stuff like that. But then you see these pictures of these massive, you know,
flotilla,
thank you, of plastic out in the ocean. So that marine biodegradable is a huge thing that I know came up often and is really exciting so that we won't hopefully continue to harm the oceans in the future so that that would no longer be a drawback. So again, thank you, Anne-Marie. Thank you, Matt, for joining us, and go out there and get some bioplastics.
Please rate, review, and subscribe. To do that, go to the iTunes podcast or Spotify app on your phone and search for Unpacked with PMMI.